The Mishnah
is on the bottom of Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph. And to sort of understand this Mishnah, you have to consider perhaps that they would eat a little bit differently. We're going to see at some point in the Gemara, I think it's on Daf, I don't know, Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, or Mem Gimel Amud Beis, somewhere later in the Perek, is a discussion of how they used to eat at meals. Now, I don't know that they ate every meal like this, and I think that poor people probably didn't eat like this either. But what the Braisa describes is how the guests would first come in, and they might even recline, but they would bring them some wine to drink. Maybe they bring them some hors d'oeuvres. Maybe this doesn't sound so different than like a catered affair, but and then they. The Braisa will talk about doing the Tiyah Shadayim, washing one hand, not two hands. And then when that was done, then they would enter the other room, and that's where the real meal would take place. So in that context, they would wash their hands in the Tiyah Shadayim again. And then they would actually eat the bread. They would eat the meal. Now, what they would also do, we saw this a little bit over in the previous sugya, we saw this idea that there's a period called the Ahara Suda, after the meal, which doesn't exist for us anymore. That's what Tosa says. And our meal ends essentially when we bench. There is no period of eating after the meal. But eat after the meal before benching. We don't have that period anymore. And if you remember what the Gemara had said, and we paskin this way in theory, but it doesn't apply in practice, is that if it is after the meal, but you haven't benched yet, and they bring out food, you have to make both a bracha before and a bracha afterwards. You need a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona. But we don't have that period anymore, so the rule is, when they bring out food for dessert, something that would be considered dessert food, so that's still considered v'tocha suda during the meal, and you only have to make a bracha before. You make a mezonos on the cake, you make a shahaka on the ice cream, you don't need to make a bracha afterwards. So what they would do when they had this period lachar suda, they would often also bring out maybe some desserts, and they would drink wine as well. So there were three different times that one could be drinking wine. There is lefnei asuda, which means before you washed, certainly. There's betoch asuda, while you're eating, and then there's laachar asuda. We will see later the Gemara's image. I'm not sure Lenny is smiling, so you think they really...
I know they were able to compile the Gemara and all of the...
Remember, they diluted their wine.
They diluted
their wine probably because the water, because whether they understood it or not, it rendered the water safe to drink. So they diluted their wine, two or three parts water to one part wine. So that's
they probably looked like a bunch of lightweights.
It was
dangerous to drink the water.
So the truth is,
what percent alcohol? I mean,
I don't know. The Rishonim, I think we either did or we will encounter this in the parak. The number of Rishonim who say, oh, they're, because already in Ashkenaz, they weren't diluting their wines. So they say, oh, their wines were much stronger than ours. Now, I don't know what the wines were like in Ashkenaz, but their wines were not any stronger than our wines, because without distilling, the Gemara, in the time of the Gemara. Again, it's also true about the medieval wines, that the maximum wine can ferment without distilling it is about 18%. At that point, the alcohol will kill, the concentration alcohol kills the yeast.
When you say there, you mean in Babylonia?
Yes, I mean in the classical period. Yeah. Right, it could be in Israel and Babylonia. Mm-hmm. So 18% is about the maximum you can get. So our table wines now, I don't mean the adult soda, the Moscato, I mean the real wines, are 13-14% typically. So it is inconceivable that their wines could have been maybe a little bit stronger, if even so. I'm not sure that was the case. But their diluting of wine, nobody knows for sure, but they think it was because they couldn't drink the water. Again, whether they understood what was going on, they obviously figured out that you drank the water alone, you got sick, you drank the water and you poured some wine in it, so that was fine. But that means that there's a Gemara in Ksubos that talks about the wine they would drink at a meal serving the mourners, serving the Avelim. And so the Gemara talks about how they had like 10 kosos. Yeah. Now again, Lenny, if you take 10 and you divide it by 3 or 4, it's 2.5, 3 cups of wine. That's not an insane amount. Again, I can't drink that amount of wine. I can, you know, 2 ounces for me on an empty stomach. I'm getting dizzy already. What? And then, they added on four more, and then they realized that was too much for people. That was their threshold, and then they dropped that. The truth is, you can see cultures, people do develop a tolerance for alcohol. I'm not suggesting that it's good for them, but I tell the story once.
You have regulate the enzymes
I once was visiting, I will not say which college campus, but it actually wasn't a bad thing. And there was a young man, seemed like a very fine man, who was in charge of running things, and he made Kiddush. I think he had Chabad roots. And he made Kiddush, and it was like a regular Becher on vodka, okay?
Friday night Kiddush?
No, Shabbos day. And he just drank it straight like that. I don't drink any of that stuff. But I'm telling you.
Don't have Carpathian relatives.
So there you go. So bottom line is that, you know, the people can develop some type of tolerance. I'm not saying it's good for them, but at least it's in the short term, they function with it. So
there was a researcher, a famous liver researcher, who had a baboon colony that drank alcohol.
I see. Okay. Human beings apparently are. I don't know if it's true about primates. We are almost unique amongst mammals that we are able to metabolize alcohol in a way that.
I mean, I didn't follow his research, but I'm sure that was the same issue in terms of studying Texas, because they didn't get the baboons weren't drunk.
Uh-huh. I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So you know to hang out within a bar, you know.
Is there a source for this theory that the alcohol, that they had wine in order to, because it was healthier for them? Because I'm just not sure that there's a real science behind that, because if you're diluting it with water, you're diluting it with contaminated water.
Yes, but the idea is that the alcohol, there's enough alcohol in the wine. I can't, yeah. I have read this. This is not coming.
If Purell came with 15% ethanol, we would all be in a lot of problems. It wouldn't
okay.
work very well.
I can't, you know, I don't know. I don't think it is the thing. Where I've read about it, you probably can find even Wikipedia. You know, in other words, it's no, I don't think anybody knows with certainty, but it is the regnant theory.
Trying to be a little revisionist. Maybe, and that the rabbis were, maybe this just was their drink. Maybe that's what they drank.
Yes, it could be, but this wasn't just the rabbi. It wasn't that it was a Minhag Yisrael and everybody else drank there. This is what everybody did. So if they understood, it was by trial and error. They realized they didn't understand why and what was going on. But anyway, so those are the three times that they would drink wine. Now, the function of the wine that's being drunk is different. There are two reasons why they might have been drinking wine. One was to drink. The other was to help with, you know, the meal. You drink while you eat. So the Gemara is going to talk about the two different functions. One of them is lishtos. The purpose is to drink, because you like to enjoy it. And the other is lishros, which means literally to soak, which means to help the digestion. The wine that was before the meal, the fenei asuda, and the wine that was la'achar asuda was lishtos. It was the purpose for drinking. The wine that was during the meal was lishros. That was to help with the digestion. And the question that the Mishnah is going to deal with, and it doesn't deal with all the scenarios, is if you make a bracha during one of those stages, meaning let's say you made a bracha before the meal on wine, the yayin lefnei asuda, you have to make a bracha subsequently. So it doesn't talk about the tocha asuda. Tosfos will talk about that. But the Mishnah will talk about la'achar asuda. And what if you drink wine betocha asuda, in the middle of the suda, which is to help with digestion, do you need to make a bracha on the wine that comes after the meal? So the Mishnah says the following, and it's worth paying careful attention to its language. Be'racha yayin shelefnei hamazon. If you made a bracha on yayin which came before the meal, patar es hayayin shelachar hamazon. It exempts the wine that is drunk after the meal from a bracha. Fine. That's what the Mishnah says. It doesn't really talk about anything else. The Gemara is going to have to fill in the rest. So, you wouldn't know this if I didn't say this to you, but I framed it that the wine before the meal and the wine after the meal have the same function. The only thing, as we will see in the Gemara, that could necessitate your making another bracha is if when you had the first wine, you assume you would not be drinking any wine later. This is an issue that you asked me about a while ago, and it's come up a number of times again. If you make a bracha on food, and you assume, let's say I have, you know, a last thing of ice cream here, and I'm quite sure that this is the last pint of ice cream in the house, and I'm going to finish it now. And I eat the ice cream, and then I discover there's a long-lost pint of ice cream in the freezer that nobody knew about. I have to make another bracha because my das wasn't going on the same, on that. Or if I'm having apples and I'm enjoying it, and you know, there's the only fruits in the house, and I would love to have oranges, but I didn't assume there were. And then I discover, even if I haven't finished my apples yet, that there are oranges in the back of the refrigerator. You have to make another bracha, even though it's a very great. So by the very same reason. If you have a cup of wine, and you make a bracha on that, but you assume that's the only wine that you're going to have, and then later it turns out they bring you another cup of wine, so you have to make another bracha. It's called...
So only in your house, right? Like if you're in a guest...
Well, you're correct. The Gemara doesn't talk about that. You're correct. That's what we saw in the previous Gemara. Ataka b'reish galusa samchinan. Generally, in Oreach, a guest doesn't know what they're going to bring. So his bracha, his intent is on whatever they serve. But when you know the lay of the land... So then, if you did not intend, even if you had, at apples, I'm not interested in oranges now. I don't want the citric acid. And then I'm fishing apples. I said, no, I wouldn't mind having an orange. You have to make a bright braids. So the same thing.
Let's say the Baal Bayis forgot. And you're so much on the Baal. So is that a general?
I would say only, it depends on what the Baal Buster was thinking.
Right. But let's say, you know, somebody said, oh, yeah, we have that.
The issue is discussed. So, but I remember what they.
Like a general, okay, generic, you don't say. And that's it? Or
I don't remember.
You're relying on the Baal Bayis.
Well, no, you're... The issue... I have to go back and look. I think the issue is discussed. Tosas, maybe... But here, Tosas said...
It's much more complicated than most of us assume.
Correct. Well, we just assume you make a bracha, and it's a blanket tour. So there is an approach that would say that certainly often we have a meal, right? You assume you don't always know what you're going to have in the meal. That's one thing. Although typically you can have such a scenario, and you know that the food is there, and if it was the same bracha, then that's the same bracha. But there are, you know, I would say when you sit down for a Shabbos meal is a better example, because you kind of know what the menu is, right? There's what the food was planned to be served for Shabbos. And then, all of a sudden, somebody has the bright idea, let's have something else. So that would normally, I think, probably would follow whatever the Baal Bayis was thinking, but I don't know for sure. I have to check on that.
So, yes,
it interrupts the connection between the bracha that you made and the food that you want to eat. Yes. Yes, that's correct.
The same food.
Right. Okay. So now the Mishnah talks about something which really doesn't get surprisingly very little discussion in the Rishon. We'll have to talk a little bit about it. Berach ala parperesh shelefnei hamazon, pateres haparperesh shelachar hamazon. So what is a parperes? Well, the truth is, if you have a parperes lefnei hamazon, before the meal, and a parperes after the meal, they're not really the same thing. We would obviously translate a parperes is before a meal is an hors d'oeuvre. You come into a fair, they give you maybe a Moshe Bateva, otherwise known as pigs and blankets, and they give you, you know, a little roasted whatever, you know, that those are the hors d'oeuvres. And then after the meal, the parperes is not, they're not going to be serving you, I don't think. I mean,
well, now they have this whole, and the kids stay later and eat even more.
I will make no editorial comment about that particular point. But after the meal, typically you're not going to serve, you know, pigs and blankets. You're going to serve a little piece of cake. You're going to serve some fruit. So the Mishnah speaks about a parperes before the mazon, and if you make a bracha on that hors d'oeuvre that's before the mazon, it exempts the parperes that is la'achar hamazon. And that would presumably, I would say, be a kal v'chomer if we don't have la'achar hamazon anymore, as Tosos claims, that we don't have that period of time. So I would assume that if you make a bracha on the thing before the mazon, it certainly exempts that parperes that's betoch hamazon, but we would normally make a new bracha on it. In other words, let's say, it seems obvious to me, I haven't seen this, I haven't noticed this being said by anyone. Let's say, I don't know, you like ring things, and you warm up the meal with a ring thing. I know that doesn't sound so appetizing. And then, after the meal, of course, you bring the ring things. So I would say if you made a bracha on the ring thing before, after the meal, even we call it betoch hasuda, certainly it shouldn't require a bracha. Right? If there, theoretically, it could be covered by two bases. It could be covered by the hamotzi, which doesn't cover it. Rav Chiya says it does, but the hamotzi could cover it. But the bracha you made before, And it's a dessert that's not dessert. I mean, it's a dessert that's not la'achal ha'mazon. But if you made a bracha on the parparis before, that parparis should, because even if it were la'achal ha'mazon, let's say you had this interregnum period between the suda and brachas ha'mazon, which is called la'achal suda. Let's say you didn't accept Tosus's, you know, a claim, or you had a case where it actually fell in that category. If the parparis making the bracha before the meal will exempt that, certainly when that parparis after the meal is actually considered during the meal, then the bracha should exempt it.
So, you would not need intent with the first bracha? Is that what we're
saying? So, again, in a context in which, the same thing is true with the wine, in a context in which it's assumed that you're likely to have such a thing, yes, then you wouldn't have to do it. There are people who have said, I think this is wrong, and I don't know that any real post-sake has actually said this, but people say to you, well, today, because dessert is so normal, it's like it's part of the meal. That's ridiculous. That's not true. Dessert is just like it was for them. It's truly optional. But I think it's fair to say, and again, that's not true during the week, but it's fair to say on Shabbos and Yom Tov that your default option will be is that they will bring dessert. And therefore, while if you didn't have a parperes before the meal, you would have to make a bracha on the dessert. But if you did have a parperes l'chanei ha'mazon, it should cover this dessert, right? Which, again, in the time of the Gemara, might have been la'achar ha'suda, and for us, it's considered b'toch ha'suda, but certainly the bracha on the, I'll call it the dessert before the meal, I'll call it the hors d'oeuvre, should exempt the bracha on the dessert. We'll come back. I want to just finish reading the Mishnah, but the question then has to be raised, what were the hors d'oeuvres and what was the dessert? Our, I think, first guess would have been is that in order for the bracha before the meal to exempt the dessert after the meal, what has to be true about that bracha?
It
has to be the same bracha, exactly. You'd assume that it has to be the same thing. The challenge, of course, if you look at Rashi writes, the first Rashi in the Mishnah says, Birich al hayayin, noagim hoyu lahavi kodam achila, kos yayin lishtos, kidetanya lekamon, ketzad seder haseva. That brisa about how they used to have their meal, and the stages will be on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. So Rashi says, umevin lefneim par peraos, they would bring hors d'oeuvres, laham shechachila, to bring out the appetite. Kigon, par giot, v'dagim. So those are shechachal. V'achar kach mevin hashulchan, then they bring the table out with, and all the food. And then, la'achar gemar suda, yoshvin v'shosin v'ochlin, they would sit, they would drink more wine, and they would eat. Umahin oflam, what would they eat? Parparos, the same word. Gigon kisane de malo liba. Now, kisane is usually assumed to be like roasted nuts. And then, the lachmaniot. That's the pas haba'a bekisnin. Right? It's the bread that would come along with the roasted nuts. So you bring Cracker Jack, you know, peanuts. At the meal, that's good dessert. I think you bring popcorn too, but, and you have bread with it. So Rashi says, "V'hu yayin v'parperes shela achar hamazon." When we said they're ochlin v'shosin, that's the wine and the parperes after the meal. U'shneim kodem berachas hamazon. And this, I think, pretty all Rishonim agree with. All of this stuff la'achar hasuda, and there's a reason why Rashi is telling you this. In this part of the Mishnah, la'achar hasuda means before you bench, and the term here is not la'achar hasuda. The term here is la'achar hamazon. It's before benching. But la'achar hamazon. So the difficulty with Rashi, and Tosos raises this, well, he doesn't explicit formally, so explicitly, is Adrian's observation. How can you say that the bracha before the meal on the pargiot and on the fish, how can you say that that's going to exempt the bracha on the roasted nuts and the little cakes after the meal? It's not the same bracha. It's really mind-boggling. I mean, the best you can say, but I can't imagine this is, maybe it's what Rashi really meant, is that the bracha you make on the pargios and dagim is shahakol, which is the bracha koheles, right? If you brought me a ring, even I'm supposed to make a mezonos on it, if I made a shahakol, because shahakol is an all-inclusive bracha, I don't have to make another bracha. So that's the best I can say for Rashi, but it's very odd. You would have expected, as Adrian suggested, that it has to be the same bracha. So Tosus writes, the Rashi, the Dibur Maskel, the second one from the bottom, and it's the Dibur Maskel, Berach Halapas Patar Separperis. It's on the second line in that Tosfos. He writes, V'Rashi Pirish Parperis Mine Dagim Upargios. That's what Rashi said, that's correct. Uktas Kasha Im Kain Mai Kamash Balan.
I start in the second line.
And let me just step back and make one observation. This is my point that Tosis doesn't ask the question explicitly. Hold that place for a second. Go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, the next line of the Mishnah, which is the third line in the Mishnah, says, Potarasa Parperis. Fourth line from the bottom. We'll go one line down. Birech alapas, potarasa parperis. If you make a bracha on the bread, you exempt the parperis. I presume that parperis is the pargios for dagim, right? It's the hors d'oeuvres that could be part of the meal as well. I assume it doesn't mean the parperis of the one that's after the meal of the cake, because that's classically where you have to make a bracha. So you made a bracha on the bread, you exempt the parperis. Doesn't need its own bracha. But ala parperis lo patarapas. But if you made a bracha on the parperis, it doesn't exempt the bread. So Tosis asked this question of Rashi, uktas kasha, im kain mai kamash malon debirach aparperis lo patarapas. Of course, if you made a bracha on the fish, on the wings, on the chicken wings, of course you don't. It doesn't exempt the bracha for bread. You just made a shahakol. Why would you even think that there is that you wouldn't have to make the bracha on the bread? That's kind of crazy. So he says, V'nira kipirish Rabbeinu Chananel, he thinks that parperis is different. The pirish to parperis, pas tsnuma b'ka'ara, the lespa turisa v'nahama. This, we learned about this already. Pas tsnuma b'ka'ara is bread that you crumble up in the thing, and we spoke about it a dach ago in the context of when you make a bracha on bread, it's preferable to make the bracha on the loaf when it's whole. You're not supposed to break the bread before you make the bracha. It's more of a kavod for the bracha. It's an honor for the bracha. It's a special treatment of the bracha when you make it on a whole loaf, because a whole loaf is more chashuv. Nobody likes to go into the bakery and say, well, yeah, I'll take that half a loaf, the one that broke off there. Everybody likes a nice whole loaf. So it was in that context the Gemara spoke about this expression, pas hatsenuma bika'ara. Tsenuma also means like dried out. In Parshas Mikates, I think the Shabbos I'll be here. So tsenumos dakos shnufos kadim. It's like all withered. So apparently it's a mizonos. So he says that the parperis is pas tsenuma bekar, the lespa torisa denahama. It doesn't have tsuras hapas, tsuras lechem. That's what torisa denahama is. The mevarchan alav bori mei mizonos. The bracha on pas tsenuma bekara is mizonos. So v'hashta nicha the itzruch lashvein and berach haparperis lo patar sapas. You might have thought that the bracha that you made mizonos on pas hatsenuma bika'ara, they're both bread, but one is a lesser bread and we only get some mizonos. And I do wonder, by the way, I don't know the answer to this question, I should know, what happens if you make a mizonos on bread? Do you have to make another bracha? I would have guessed not, but I'm not 100% sure. In other words, I would think that boring the mizonos subsumes within it bread. So ideally, you're supposed to say Abotzi Lachmanos, but the Dieved, you did it already, you don't make another bracha. So, especially if you assume that, I would have thought that if you make a bracha on this Pas HaTzenuma Bika'ara, that you might have exempted the bread for the meal, and that's why the Mishnah has to tell you that Afal Gav Dehu Min Pas, even though it is another kind of bread. Okay, and Tosus has another raya from the Gemara. So Tosus doesn't ask the question on Rashi, Adrian's question, but Tosus's answer does answer that question. You're wondering, how is it that the bracha on the parperis before the meal, which Rashi said was a shahako, would exempt the food that you eat, the dessert afterwards? But the answer is no. It's not a shahako. It's a mizonos on pasat tsunuma l'ka'ara, and therefore the lachmanios that you eat later would be exempted by that bracha, and the kistin might be just go along with the bread. Larry?
So what I'm now understanding, which I wasn't sure about, is so whatever you, if the bracha, it's clear that if the bracha you made at the beginning of the meal, before the meal, would be you'd be yotze with the bracha after the meal if it was the same bracha. That's clear.
I think
even so. It wasn't the same food.
Correct. Yes. Yes.
It's not like the apple orange.
But the problem with the apple orange is not that it's an apple versus an orange, because it's true for an apple and an apple.
Right,
the problem is that I didn't have it in mind.
Right,
once I have it in mind,
we're assuming intent.
We assume intent, because that's the way they
eat. That's the way they eat.
Right. Okay. That's what we assume.
But nobody seems to think, Rashi or Tosfos, that the bracha needs to be the same. In other words, Rashi's saying it doesn't have to be the same. He's saying a shahakol before the meal.
No, no, Tosfos, it is the same. Yeah. So because
but
the,
he's not making it because of that reason.
No, correct. That's what I said. He doesn't. Right. He doesn't ask that question, which really surprises me. And I Rabbeinu Yonah also doesn't. I think doesn't ask that question either. But that to me seems to be the obvious question. It happens to be that Tosfos' answer solves that problem. So right. I don't know. Like you can't argue that Tosfos agrees with Rashi on that point, and he's only disagreeing because it wouldn't make sense in the other line of Mishnah. It's possible, but once Tosfos has to overturn Rashi's opinion anyway, he's now solved the other problem. He doesn't necessarily have to ask the other question. Okay. So now the Mishnah continues. Birech al hapas patar sapar peres al peres lo patar sapas. And then Beishamai omrim aflo masei kedera. Now Beishamai's opinion is difficult to understand, and the Gemara, I'm not going to talk about it at all now, the Gemara will explore. I'll tell you what he says. Beishamai says, not even masei kedera. Masei kedera is oatmeal, is farina, right? It's a porridge. It's a stew which involves one of the five grains. But whatever the wheat, if I guess it's farina, what's that what it's called? It would be the equivalent. So masa kedera is when you take one of the five grains and you crush it up or you mush it up and you cook it that way. So masa kedera gets a bracha of mizonos. Note, I'll remind you something that I did not know until like last year or so preparing this. When we're learning this, that if you have rice is the exception to the rule. If the rice grains are identifiable whole, it's not mushed, you still make a mizonos on the rice. But let's say you have a barley, my wife makes a barley salad. So all the kernels, you can see them clearly, they're all separate. You don't make a mizonos on it, you make chadam on it. Only if it's cut up, broken up, or it's mushed, like in a chillin, I think it's, the barley is mushed enough. You make a mizonos on it. But if it's actually the whole kernels, then you make hadam on it. We learned that. It came up a few blad ago in the Gemara. So masa kedera, to qualify, unless it's rice, it has to be broken up or smushed. Fine.
Is the Tanakam here Beis
Hillel,
or we don't know?
I mean, the Tanakam is the opinion we're going to accept. Their assumption is
it's Beis Hillel
allowed? Yes.
How often do we have Beis Shammai without...
I should know the answer to this question because I explored this data in my dissertation for other reasons. I don't know offhand. I don't know.
Unusual.
Yes, it's pretty rare. That I can tell you is pretty rare. I can tell you that you have a handful of Mishnayos because they're in Avios, maybe two or three Mishnayos, where you have Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, and Shammai without Hillel, three opinions. How often you get Beis Shammai without Beis Hillel, I suspect is pretty rare. But I don't know. I don't know offhand how many times.
So what's he arguing with?
That's what the Gemara wants to know. That's exactly the point. It's totally unclear. And there are two possibilities, but let's leave Beis Shammai's opinion until we get to the Gemara. It may not be today, but yes, it is very unclear what exactly is Beis Shammai arguing. That's correct.
And just one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
The pas that's being mentioned in the Mishnah is not the bread for hamotzi.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yes. So we're told that even though, let's say the way Rabbeinu Hananel, Tosus and Rabbeinu Hananel read, even though you made a bracha on pasat sumah bekaara, which was a mizonos, that bread doesn't exempt the bracha on the pas of the meal.
And is Rashi for sure read it that way? Because these lachmaniyot in Rashi.
Well, I mean, those are after the meal. The problem is they're after the meal, so they're not even under the discussion.
Post meal lachmaniyot.
Yeah.
That you make hamotzi on.
No, mizonos. It's pasab abekistan. Pasab abekistan. Yeah, it's dessert bread. It's dessert bread. Let's leave it as dessert bread.
Okay.
Now, what are the implications of this whole concept of the wine before the meal and the wine during the meal with respect to kiddush?
Oh, that's the only.
I was wondering that often happens, like someone comes over before a meal and
you're talking about even before kiddush.
Is that like
pre-Shabbos
Ruach?
Right. Yes, right.
So
I'm talking about how kiddush itself plays. No, I understand. But
I believe I am sure.
When you make hamotzi,
what's that? No, hamotzi doesn't. Let's say you didn't make kiddush. Let's say it was no kiddush. It's during the week. If you wash and your bread, you have to make a bar piragafen. We discussed already the machlokas that we shown them about what all of the beverages, but we passed in all of the beverages you don't make a bracha on. Those are part of the meal. But wine, that's the Gemara. The Gemara said on top of this amun. The Gemara is explicit. That why wine, you have to make film bracha. Wine has a special significance, a special chashivus. You must make its own bracha. But the question Larry is asking is, what if you made Kiddush before? Now, I am not a wine drinker, nor do I generally find myself at fancy parties. It is definitely not me. I would rather be probably getting root canal than that. It's just not me. Let's just put it this way. I like to say there's a reason I'm not a pulpit rabbi. I'm not of the schmoozers. So, but you, I understand you come into a nice thing, and the first thing they do, you come into a very fancy apartment on the Upper East Side, and the first thing the servers will offer you a glass of wine. Okay, so you'd like to drink wine, and you drink that, you make a bari prihagafen on it. Fine. Now, you sit down, and let's say you wash, and now, so the question is, do you have to make a bracha on that wine during the meal? That is very similar to the question that Larry is asking, which is, what about, you make Kiddush Friday night? You made Kiddush Friday night, and you made a bari pre-agafen on the Kiddush wine, and now you want some more wine during the meal. So the question is, do you have to make another bracha, or does that bracha exempt you? Now, there is, theoretically, a difference between those two scenarios. Lahalacha, lamasa, the final outcome, there is no difference. But conceptually speaking, there's a difference between those two, which is that by Kiddush, you might very well argue, before I even say this, you know what the halacha is. What's the halacha? Do you have to make a bracha on wine during the meal? No, you know that. Why is it so obvious? It's more obvious than my dinner party. Yes, exactly that. The halacha is that ain kiddush ala b'makom sudi. You cannot fulfill your obligation of kiddush if it is not in the place that you eat your meal. So if I go over to your house and you just make kiddush, and I don't sit down and eat with you, and then I go off because I have something to attend to for whatever reason, I'm not yotzei my obligation of kiddush because it wasn't the makom sudi. Because of that, the wine, even though it comes right before the meal, is part of the meal, so of course it is exempt from wine during the meal. But
if you're sitting in the living room, of course, you have a glass of wine, you make a cup of appropriate. Then you sit down and you make another kiddush.
No. That I didn't say. That I didn't say. That's an interesting question. I don't know what you do in that case. And the answer is, in that case, I'm going to go to the old fallback position. Don't. Right. Well, yes, you can't. The truth is, you're not allowed to eat or drink before Kiddush anyway. So, thank you. Thank you for saving me.
You can eat, right?
Correct.
In the same way, and you don't make Kiddush.
We had this, I think I was asked this question at the start.
I asked you the question about Friday night.
Correct. There was something discussion about doing here in shul. I forget the reason was they wanted to stall so after shul, before people went home. I don't remember what the reason was. They wanted to have Kiddush.
People were talking about having Kiddush in shul Friday night. To bring more people. That was like the same...
Right, correct. And having a kiddush, right? So the halacha is you can. Yes. Halacha is you can do that if you have, let's say, however you define the makom suda, we've discussed that issue as well. In theory, if you drank a revius of wine, that is called, the Gaonim say that's called makom suda. The only problem is most people, even when the rabbi makes kiddush, most people don't drink any of the wine. Certainly, they don't drink a full revius of wine. Right. But if you put crackers out so that people have stuff, and that's permissible. You're allowed to do that. That's not a problem. Then you can go home, even though it's not your Shabbos meal. It's enough of a suda that it allows you to fulfill your obligation of kiddush, and then you go home and have your regular suda. You won't make kiddush. You will not make kiddush again.
Unless you make it for
correct. Here you do. Here you do because of shinui makom. You're changing your place. But in theory,
if you went in, though, let's say we had a meal in make kiddush, and then we had a meal afterwards, you wouldn't make kiddush again.
But would you?
When they drink the wine before the meal, and then they wash, they don't make an ala gefen. They don't make the bracha chron on the wine because it's understood it leads into the meal. It will be exempted by the benching that's after the meal. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Sam.
How about this second cup in the Seder? Why do you make a separate bracha? Why isn't that also considered, Yayid Mamakam Suda? Sort of.
First, Sam asks a very good question. Everybody should hear the question. He asked, why is it that we make a bracha on the second cup at the Seder? So first thing you should know, Sam, is not everybody does. Ashkenazim do. But the big machlokas are Rishonim. There, I think Chachmei Svarad, and I don't remember if this is the Mechaber's position or not, you have to ask a Svaradi, is they only make a Bari Pri Agafen on the first and on the third Kosas. Not on the second and the fourth. I don't ask. I don't know what their practice was. But Ashkenazim do, and the reason I believe that is given, that we make a bracha, is because the Haggadah is a hefsek. The Haggadah is not the meal. And therefore, it's a hefsek from the Bari Priha, even though it's Kiddush Malkum Suda physically, and we will an hour later eat the meal, so the Kiddush is fine. But because you're not eating in the interim, the Haggadah, which, you know, depends on who you are, but some people take a couple of hours, that constitutes a hefsek in between. The real question, is, which I don't remember...
So they will.
Yeah.
So why don't we make a bracha on Hadamah on Marar if there's a hefsek?
We learned that. Tosus talk about it. That's the Tosus on the top of the Beis Hamelach. We learned that a week or two ago, or a shir or two ago, whatever that was. Tosus says, Tosus argues that the Marar is considered only on Pesach night, because you're obligated to eat Marar. The Marar is considered Dvarim Habayim Mechamas Asuda, and they don't require bracha at all. That's the top, on the Beis Hamelach, that's the top Tosus here.
Okay. But it's eaten before Hamotzi.
No, it's not.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Absolutely. Okay. True. Okay.
All right, so that problem, we're supposed to solve that problem. Okay. So the answer to the question, Tosis is going to claim, we'll talk about, we'll look at the Tosis. I hope we'll get there today. Tosis will say that if you make a bracha, Kiddush, not only Kiddush, any yayin that's bar kodem hasuda, I'll spill the beans already if we're going to take a quick look at it. Any Kiddush, Lishtos is a higher purpose than Lishros. Lishtos puts wine on a pedestal. This is really chashuv. This is really significant. Nobody sits
not
around.
Coming secondary to something else.
Right. Whereas Lishros is almost secondary to the meal. So if you made a bracha before the wine, before the meal on the wine, that's a bracha chashuva, and it exempts any wine that's consumed during the meal. But if you first made a bracha on wine during the meal, which you have to, if you didn't have any bar priya gafen before, the bracha samotzi doesn't exempt wine in the meal, then that wine in the meal, since it's only drunk lishros, it cannot exempt the wine that is drunk after the meal, which is, you know, which is lishtos. So that's what Tosis will say, that lishtos can exempt lishros, but lishros can't exempt lishtos. So, again, the Gemara never talks about either of these two scenarios, right? It just talks about, the Mishnah only talks about...
But isn't your first sip of wine lishtos, even if it's a lishros kind of atmosphere? Right, like you make borei pereg up, and then you drink.
No. Why are you drinking?
Right. You're drinking at the beginning after the bracha because you're drinking.
But why are you drinking wine in the first place?
Not why you're drinking it the bracha.
The purpose of the
first time you're drinking it.
If you weren't interested in the lishros aspect. If you want to enjoy drink, I shouldn't say this, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and the wine drinkers will tell me I'm wrong. If you want to appreciate wine, you don't have other things with it. Right? You want to just have the taste of the wine itself. So when you're eating the wine, drinking the wine during the meal, the purpose, at least from the way the Gemara frames it, is not so you can enjoy wine. The purpose is to help with the digestion. So yes, you make a bracha, and you have to drink a little something before you do anything else, but the purpose of the wine is lishros. So the bracha is attached to the purpose of the wine. When you sit before the meal, or you sit after the meal, now you want to enjoy, you know, a good vintage wine and appreciate the blueberry peach flavors that one can discern in these things. I want to be the person who gets to write those descriptions. Okay. Anyway.
One second, Sam. Something else to drink to be lishros, but you chose wine.
But they choose wine. Listen, it has, you know, it has another function. I presume, again, it could be because they couldn't drink the water. Right? That could be the sole reason. It could be that while they're at it, they might as well get a little happier too. But the purpose of drinking, if you want to appreciate wine, the time to do it is not in between the bites of the food. Sam?
Yeah. If you're eating food qua medicine and not qua food, in others, it just happens, you know, I'm being a little cute here, that lishros doesn't even sound like you're doing it for the enjoyment of wine. It almost, it's bordering on medicinal, and no medicine is a bracha before.
Yes and no. Right, it's not, medicinal is a little bit strong, right? There is a choice of the wine because of its taste on some. That was what Josh was asking, why not drink water? So whatever the reason was, we wouldn't say it's not l'shem refuah, in the sense that, look, all food is l'shem refuah, right? Because it's a well-known phenomenon, according to doctors, that if you don't eat any food, you die pretty quickly. So, you know, Larry and David can confirm or deny that for me, but I think it's a pretty well-understood phenomenon. So on some level, all food is for refuah purposes, but we don't call it refuah, we call it normal eating, right? So we would say there are three things. Sometimes you have things that are for eating, some things that are for drinking, and there are some things that are really the refuah, that if it weren't for the medicinal purposes, you would fill yourself with something else. I don't think that we would say that about the wine. So it's not, you're right, it is more utilitarian as opposed to the wine before the meal, after the meal, but I wouldn't call it l'shem refuah, and it requires a bracha. Right? When something, by the way, is truly the refuah, this came up already twice. I know we've taken a long time. I have the privilege that I'm also teaching at YU. This is the parak that we're learning this year. I would say it's never happened before, but I've only taught two mesechtas of KJ, so that's not a shock. But the Gemara already twice has said that the Gemara thought that maybe if you drank something only the refuah, you wouldn't even have to make a bracha on it. The conclusion of the Gemara is that since you also enjoy it, because it could be a food, if you were using it for the purpose, you have to make a bracha. But typically the bracha is shahakol, because it's only the refuah. So no, this is not the refuah. You're right, it's not for the, you know, the enjoyment of fine wine. It has a more tachlis, or, you know, there's presumably one could go through life without ever drinking wine, and would not, I know that some would tell me you're missing out on something, but fundamentally, it's not an essential part of life. Eating is an essential part of life. Digestion is an essential part of life. So therefore, that the yain is lishros. It's part of that category, but it's not l'refuah either.
Looks like if you put the medicine in the applesauce, right, that you can swallow it, let's say.
Ooh, that's a good question. Ooh.
Can you repeat the question?
The question is, what if you mix medicine into applesauce? You dissolve it, break it up, so because you can't eat the medicine straight. So what bracha do you make on that? See, that's a good question. See, when you drink water to put down a pill, you don't make a shakal even. And that's what the Mishnah says later, the last Mishnah of the Torah. Shos samayim l'refuah, as opposed to for thirst. So you can't put down a pill, you drink the water, whatever you need to drink,
but
you don't make any bracha.
Something else.
So thank you. You've answered my question, probably. Thank you. If you choose to use apple juice as opposed to water, so then you have to make a bracha. Because the assumption is you're being nana also from the eating. So I would think with the applesauce, I would think in this case, since the applesauce is ha'etz. We had the first case that came up in the parak was something called anigron. I don't know. It's a Greek word. I don't know exactly what it is. But it was like vegetable broth, and they would put olive oil in it. And that was the main component. And the Gemara used that as a discussion of if you are.
They used it as a medicinal purpose.
See, that was a weird. Yeah, they did. The problem was there. And yes, and was there. The question is, what was the ikar? Was it the vegetable liquid, the vegetable broth, or was it the olive oil? And the Gemara was trying to explain the one case where you can make a bracha bari preitz on olive oil. Because if you take olive oil in a cup and you drink it, you don't make a bari preitz because that's not normal. You can't do that. It's rather unpleasant. And if you have your bread dipped in a very fine olive oil, you don't make a bracha on the olive oil because it's tough for the bread. So the Gemara, in order to find the one case where Shmuel said and Rabbi Yochanan said, you make a bari preitz on Shemen Zayin, is when you eat it in a negron. But the Gemara said it has to be when you're doing it in the refuah. For refuah purposes, with the oil as the primary component, because you're trying to sort of coat your throat with the oil. As opposed to, if you're not doing it for refuah purposes, then the anigron, the meishlakos, is the primary thing. Whatever bracha you make on that, shahakol, b'hadama, whatever it is. So that happens to be a case where it's the refuah, but I know what the answer is. That, I'll tell you what the other case is. That refuah, it's a real food. It's a standard food.
Right.
It might even be the exact same ingredients. The purpose is the refuah. That just is, so of course, that's like eating the applesauce. Of course you have to make the bracha of the anigron. It's just, you wouldn't know there are two ingredients in the anigron. This vegetable broth, this olive oil, which is the primary ingredient, which is the ikar in this case. So it depends why you're drinking the anigron. If you're drinking it just as a beverage, so the vegetable broth is the ikar, whatever bracha you make on that. If you're drinking it because you have a sore throat, so then the shemen zayis, the olive oil is the ikar, and you make a bari preitz.
Even though the only reason for the medicinal reason.
Yes, but because it's a regular food. The other example that the Gemara gives is something called shasisa, which had some flour in it, and it was mixed with other stuff. And the Gemara starts out, we learned this, it was a machlokas rav and shemua, and then the Gemara says, whether you make mizonos or you make shahakal. And the Gemara said, there is no machlokas, actually. It all depends on why you're doing it, whether you're doing it because you want to enjoy the food or you're doing it for refuah determines how dilute you make the thing. And as if you're doing it for refuah purposes, you have less flour and far more water or whatever the liquid was, whereas when you're doing it because you want to eat it, you have more flour in it. So in that case, you're talking about a food, shasisa, whatever that is, which is made in a way that you would never make it in order to consume it if your desire was to eat it for the enjoyment of eating. So in that case, because it's not the way you would ever eat it, it's reduced from a mizonos to shahakum. But this this case of the wine and the meal is not in the category of refuah. But so going back to Larry's case, I think if you break up the pill into the applesauce, you make the bracha of the applesauce. Yeah. If you broke it up into water, then you wouldn't have to make a shakla.
Because you had an option, you could have used water or something else.
I don't think it's just because you had an option. I think because we assume that the amount of hanah you get from the water is relatively minimal. And therefore, if all you're doing is mixing it to water and you're drinking water just for refuah purposes, you're exempt. But once you have something else, I understand where you're going with this. You're going to ask me, Isaac, let's say the only beverage you have is apple juice. That's all there is in the fridge. There's a water main break, and so you can't get any water in there. What bracha would you make in? I think you make the shahakal. I think we would say that once you're being nana from that kind of a food, I think, you know, for all I know that you go dig in some machlokas achronim or something like that, because there's a machlokas about almost everything. But yes. Okay. So now, well, Larry, here's the problem with that. Maybe the question is that a bracha shein etzricha? I've always wondered. But that line is a very fine line. Okay, fine. Let's let that go. So now the Mishnah is going to turn its attention to a totally different topic, which is, really, you know, the fact that these two things are together, they both have to do with what constitutes a meal, a suda, but they have nothing to do with one another. The Mishnah says, Hayu Yoshvin, a bunch of people are sitting around. So, you know, the guys are sitting around after the new game, pickleball. So they've been playing pickleball, and they're now in the locker room, cooling down, and, you know, a couple of guys are sitting around, and they pull out a Gatorade from their locker. So the question is, or let's say they pull out, you know, some wine spritzer or something like that. They're
cold beer.
Yes.
Some wine in a can.
Wine in a can. So they pull it out, okay? Or wine in a box even they have now. So they pull it out, and they're drinking a little bit there. Now the question is, can one person, and now the Mishnah is going to talk about bread, okay? So let's say better. They're so hungry, they're going to eat, you know, a whole, no, I can't use the anthem as donuts, those are fried. So you got to find the... What's that? No, because it's real bread. I've got to come up. Okay, they're all sitting down to eat their sandwiches. I mean, wow, they brought their whole wheat sandwich, you know, with organic tuna fish and, you know, olive oil based mayonnaise, because these guys are really healthy, and they're going to sit around and eat. They pull sandwiches out of the locker room. Each brings their own sandwich. So the question is, does one person make a bracha for all of them or not? And the Mishnah says that if they were sitting, and we'll talk about this term in a minute, every person makes their own brachat hamotzi, and Tosis says both their own brachat hamotzi and the brachat hamazon afterwards. There's no zimun here. Heisebu, now heisebu could have one of two meanings here. The way most Rishonim understand it is the heseba of the leil haseder. We're not talking about Pesach night, but it means you lie in a bed and people eat. You know, everybody has their own bed; they eat reclining. Now, there is another position that's quoted from, I believe, Rav Haigon, one of the Gaonim, that no, Heseba doesn't have to mean you have a bed, but what does Heseba actually mean? The root is correct, Adrian, it's Saviv, it's Samach Beis Beis, which means around. And he points to a pasuk in Chumash after the brothers sold Yosef, Vayeshavu Lecho Lechem. And they sat down to eat bread, and the Targum is V'istacharu. The word schor, schor in Aramaic, samach hasreish, means is saviv in Hebrew. Now, the truth is, these two opinions really should be the same opinion. Right? What the Gaon is saying is that you don't need to have beds there, as long as you're sitting in a circle. But when people did Haseba, that was also what they would... It wasn't called Haseba because of the bed. It was called Haseba because they would sit around. Now, obviously, this meant...
Eating together or not?
So the question is, today, when's the last time you ate a meal reclining on a couch or sofa or a bed? Exactly. Well, yes, most people never. For the few of us, some of us eat Leil HaSeder like that, because we like to do that, and if you have the room, you can do that. So we don't eat the HaSeder anymore. That's not how people eat. You can go, when the president holds a state dinner, there's no one lying on a bed that way, at least to the best of my knowledge. Although, one would wonder if, like, if you went to the king of Saudi Arabia,
yeah,
maybe in Saudi Arabia they would. That is possible. But in Washington, D.C., when President Biden hosts a state dinner, it's as formal as you get, and there is no Haseba. So would you say, therefore, well, that's not called That's not called eating together, and therefore everybody's on their own. So you obviously know the answer to the question, because most of you this past Shabbos, or many of you, if you had three adult males at the table, you made a zimun. Not everybody did. I didn't, but you did. You made a zimun. Nobody was in the Baruch household, if they had a zimun the Shabbos, nobody was lying on reclining on a bed. They were all sitting at the table. So obviously, you know the answer to the question before we begin, that for us, sitting at a table in some way is considered haseba. And now, if you adopt the Gaon's definition of haseba as just being around, it is what the Mishnah says. Tosos and most Rishonim didn't read it that way, but they say, but for us, so sitting, if we are sitting, is like they're reclining. No. I'm referring to Rav Chai Gaon from 1,000 years ago. I only said the Gaon. You're correct. I shouldn't have said that, because if I say the Gaon, people will think of the Gaon. But Rabbeinu Yonah quotes, I just don't remember which Gaon. Maybe Rav Chai Gaon. Probably Rav Chai Gaon, because that's the one that's quoted the most. Where is this? Okay. Hold on.
Okay. Good. That's fine. No.
Got it. Okay. Who says that? One second. I just want to see. Rav Chai Gaon. So Rav Chai Gaon is the one who says that being around. That Rav Chai Gaon is the one who says that if you are around, if you're facing one another, it doesn't matter what manner you're sitting. It would be an interesting question.
I mean, but what about if you're eating together?
Let's say you're standing facing each other.
Yeah, whatever.
So Tosis we will look at Tosis probably next week. Tosis explicitly states you have to be seated. Right?
At some point?
Well, I mean, the answer is you sit down to eat. We would say you sit down to eat. And Tosis says, yes, you have to sit down. Right? He says that if you're riding on donkeys, let's say you were the equestrian club, so you're riding on your horses, and you all stop. Stopping your horses, but sitting on your horses constitutes sitting. But if you are walking around, Tosa says that's not considered haseba. We'll talk more about this when we get to the Gemara on it.
Your example that you gave of guys after they've worked out and had sports, and in the locker room they want to take out their sandwiches, they would be standing around. That's not haseba.
Yeah, but even if they were seated, that's not haseba. In other words, what we're going, I can't. The Gemara is going to tell a story, and I won't tell the story because it's a very powerful story. We'll get to that next week. But the upshot of the story is that if a group of people say, "Let's meet in such a place and eat," that's called haseba, right? What's that?
Even in the absence.
So Tosis claims you have to still be sitting. But the Gemara doesn't say that, but Tosis says you have to be sitting. I think that if you take Rav Chai Gaon literally, the way Rabbeinu Yonah quotes him, so technically speaking, seating isn't required. You have to be facing each other. I don't know for sure. Maybe Rav Chai Gaon would agree that just the guy standing around, you know, schmoozing while they're eating their sandwiches, maybe that doesn't really constitute kvius, you know, sort of, you know, joining together. But at least the way, as he understands the term haseba, which means to be around, which then means if you sit around a table, for sure it's good. I don't know what he would say about standing around, but Tosis is very clear. Tosis says haseba in the Mishnah means that you were reclining on a bed. But for us, because we don't do that anymore, for us, sitting around a table is the same thing as they're doing on a bed, right? It's not saying, for Rav Chai Gaon, it's actually implicit in the words of the Mishnah, what we do constitutes haseba and everybody. It's one bracha for everybody. Whereas for Tosfos, the Mishnah means something different than we do, but because the world has changed, what we do now is the equivalent of haseba then.
You can argue that if the world is a buffet world, then that could constitute haseba.
In theory, you're right, but I think when you look at buffet, it's not typical, right? There is an idea of arai. You know, when you go to a shmorg and you could eat a lot of food there, I don't think anybody would say that's kvius, right? You go from this place to that place, you're talking to this person, she was your next person. I think it's not that you couldn't in theory be standing. Let's say you were just not sitting.
Right,
yeah.
at KJ now, you can wash and bed.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a church of Rome, and there are a number of people who I'm sure are doing this. So they, in theory, could not make a mezuzah together.
I believe so. I believe that's
so correct. That would make more sense to me than going to being invited to a buffet as opposed to a shul kiddush in someone's home.
Right, but I, you know, what would happen again? Do you ever have you invited to
together.
Could I, at a buffet?
No, it's
someone's home. I'm saying
even in someone's home.
But I guess I've never been invited to a buffet. Just in that, you know, in that particular form. I don't know what people do there. I would imagine, you know, people want to sit down at some point for the speeches for something like. It's not like an open house. An open house is the thing I can think of invited to. That's a buffet. That's not Tvius. Like you're in, you're out. You know that I became.
But some people like they make a kiddush lunch at their place,
right?
And there's not enough seat. There's certainly not enough seat in there.
But there are people are. Well, okay. I have to see it in order to at least to offer my opinion, right or wrong on it. Okay. So let's just finish the Mishnah. So again, how you yoshim kol echad merach la'atzmo heisebu echad mevarech l'chulam. Now bolahem yayin betocha mazon. Now, the Mishnah says, what happens if they bring out wine in the middle of the meal? Now, remember, up until now, the Mishnah has spoken about making a bracha on wine before the meal exempts the wine that's after the meal. It doesn't say anything about the wine during the meal. Now, in this case, they bring them wine during the meal, and here the halacha is, even though they've done haseba, kol echad ve'echad mevarech li'atzmo, everybody has to make their own bracha on the wine. The Gemara is going to talk about why. I'm not spilling that secret now. You will not get me to spill it.
So is that... Is
there
a table or
the
Diabet, or
you'll
talk about that?
Well, you, at minimum, we mean if someone made the bracha. Not clear. Not clear. I mean, the answer is if they paid attention, and they probably, most I think, would say they're Yotze. And sort of they answered Amen, but you don't even need Amen to answer. But you're not supposed to. Everyone is supposed to make their own bracha. That's the takana. Now, the crucial question, which the Gemara will discuss here, is, Bolehem Yayin B'Tocha Mazon, in this meal, had there been wine before the meal? Because if there had been wine before the meal, why are they making a bracha during the meal? The Gemara will talk about that. Then, l'achar amazon, if they bring the wine after the meal, echad mevarech l'chulam, one person makes a bracha for all of them. Now, one thing we can say about this particular line is it's quite clear that this must be a scenario in which they didn't bring wine before the meal. Because if it's l'achar amazon, you're making a bracha. It means if they brought the wine before the meal, the bracha before potters, the bracha after. That's not necessarily. We don't know what the bracha in the middle. So if this line l'achar amazon,
the simple reading of the Mishnah would be that they didn't.
Correct. But l'achar amazon echad mevarech l'chulam has to be there was no wine before the meal. Therefore, it's a reasonable assumption that the previous thing b'alem yayin b'toch amazon there was also no wine before the meal. Okay. Then finally, the Mishnah says, "V'hu amar omer al hamugmar." Mugmar is some type of spices that they would burn, fragrance. And the person who made the bracha, it would seem, on the yayin after the meal, he is offered the honor of making the bracha on the mugmar. The afal pi she'en mevina sa mugmar ela la'achar su'uda. Even though they only bring the mugmar after the su'uda.
The mugmar is something you eat.
No, you smell. But you make a bar. You have to make a bracha bar yimei besamim. Or bar after besamim, right? If you want to smell something nice, the bracha bar yimei besamim is not just for havdalah. Right? That we the minhag is to try to always have to make a bar yimei besamim with havdalah. But whenever, if you want to smell something nice, you want to smell your esrog.
You light up one of those candles, which I did.
In theory, probably the default bar yimei besamim is the bracha. By the way, like shahakol. If you're not sure which bracha, there are lots of different brachas to make on fragrances. Like on an esrog, I think you make the bracha of Hashanasan Reach Tov Beperos. I'm sure you've never made that bracha, but that's the bracha you make. But there are very specific brachas. There's Borei Atzei Besamim, there's Borei Isvei Besamim. But if you're not sure which bracha of the Besamim, you make a Borei Mine Besamim. That's the shahakol of smelling. Okay. We're going to learn that. Don't worry, it's coming. So the Mishnah says that you're Mechabed the person who made the bracha on the wine, la'achar amazon, with the bracha on the mugmar, even though the mugmar only comes la'achar asuda. When is la'achar asuda? So Rashi says here, and many Rishonim say this, la'achar asuda, Rashi says, is la'achar birchas amazon. Now, why does Rashi say that? And we'll leave it this. Because you'll notice the language of the Mishnah has switched. When we spoke about the yayin and the parparas, it was la'achar hamazon. when we spoke about Mugmar, it's La'achar Suda. Yeah, you have to read carefully. Okay. So anyway, we'll stop here, and next week, God willing, we will resume with the Gemara and going through some of the issues that we haven't yet fully fleshed out.